You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks, riding solo for our Monday episode. Hope everybody had a great weekend and stayed safe, stayed healthy. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Without the benefit of any preseason games, the Seahawks took the field on Saturday for their first mock scrimmage at CenturyLink Field, hoping to learn a great deal about their team. There's just 3 weeks left until the start of the regular season. Unfortunately, a scary injury prevented them from getting as much done as they hoped to. Early in the second quarter, while rushing from his defensive end position, Brandon Jackson collided helmet to helmet with tackle Cedric Ubuehi. And as coach Pete Carroll noted, it was like a knockout punch. He just dropped straight to the turf and he laid there for several minutes as medical personnel came out to tend to him. It was a very scary situation. And up in the press box, none of us really knew what was going on. And for a long time, we didn't even know what player it was until we were able to finally see the instant replay up there in the press box. And without their normal medical facilities, all operational as they would normally be during the regular season, the team called for an ambulance out of precaution. Jackson had his face mask removed from his helmet, and then he was strapped to a backboard and hauled to the hospital. A very scary situation, and everybody in the press box was kind of on pins and needles. And Pete Carroll decided there'd been a long delay. They'd already gotten in two quarters, four drives worth of possessions, decided it wasn't worth it to get everybody started back up. And out of respect of what he called one of our favorite all-time guys in Jackson, they canceled the final two quarters and they sent the players home early. Thankfully, there's plenty of good news to report here. Later in the evening, Jackson was allowed to leave the hospital and drove himself home from the team facility. He had feeling in all of his extremities when he was escorted away from the stadium, which was a really good early sign after the injury. And then he was back on Sunday morning at the team facility getting his COVID-19 testing. He attended meetings today. The team is going to be very cautious when it comes to getting him back on the field, as they should be, given the recent data that we have on head injuries, the severity of them. They are going to take their time and make sure he's 100% ready before they allow him to go back to the field of play. But nonetheless, really good news on Jackson's front that he could be able to play here sometime in the near future and that he's good to go. Nothing more severe, no other injuries coming from that hit with the way he overall, it looks like they dodged a bullet on what was a really scary injury at the clink on Saturday. Some other injuries of note, speedy receiver Philip Dorsett suffered a foot injury during Saturday's practice. Coach Carroll deemed it a sore foot. He could be seen tending to that on the sidelines during the scrimmage on Saturday and did not participate in Monday's session. He is day-to-day. Maybe there's a chance he'll be back in the field tomorrow or at latest on Wednesday when they have another scrimmage at CenturyLink Field. Tyler Lockett sat out a portion of Monday's practice with ice in his leg, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be too severe. May have just been precautionary, may have felt a slight tweak in that leg. We should have more details on that injury coming out tomorrow. LJ Collier was also out with an undisclosed injury. If you're looking for some good injury news, though, Puna Ford returned after a long absence due to a strained calf. He got hurt in one of the first couple practices of training camp, and he's been on the sidelines ever since. So they get one of their starting defensive tackles back. Looks like he's going to be in good shape. And Bruce Irvin was back in action today after missing the last two practices with a minor hip flexor. Told reporters today during a conference call that he was good to go. So some positive news there along the defensive line for the Seahawks as we get closer to the start of the regular season. When I return for the second quarter, it's time for our Monday mailbag. I'll answer as many questions as I can from you, the listeners. Don't go away. You're listening to Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Talking about erectile dysfunction isn't easy. Usually we just brush it off or blame ourselves, saying things like, I lost my mojo, or we avoid it altogether with excuses like, I had a long day at work, or sorry, honey, I'm just not feeling it. But with Roman, it is easy to talk about it. With a real healthcare professional who can prescribe real medication, it's simple, safe, and totally discreet. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship it to you with free 2-day shipping. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to tackle, but now there's Roman. Just go to GetRoman.com/XXX to connect with a healthcare professional for an online visit and take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL today. If approved, you'll get $15 off your first order of ED treatment. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, here on our Monday podcast. Coming up in the third quarter, I'm not going to be able to disclose a lot of information from Saturday's mock due to restrictions that have been placed on the media from the Seahawks directly. I understand why they're doing things the way they are this year. It's just unfortunate I won't be able to dive into the details as much as I would like, but I'm going to share some takeaways that I am allowed to give our listeners from Saturday's mock scrimmage. First, let's get to your Locked On Seahawks mailbag. First question coming from Rasheem the Dream. Do you think Pete Carroll and John Schneider look smarter for letting Earl Thomas go now? I don't know necessarily that I would say they look smarter. I think this was something that, as everybody knows, Thomas wore out his welcome in Seattle over a couple years. There were a number of different things that happened when he went into the Cowboys locker room and told then coach Jason Garrett to come get him. And then, of course, flipping off Pete Carroll as he was taken off on a cart in Arizona the last game that he wore a Seahawks uniform. There were a lot of other little things in there as well. Him getting older, he had another broken leg a few years before then, so he had some injury concerns. So I think the Seahawks had been planning for a couple years that they were going to be moving on. And as the tension continued to grow, that bridge was burned beyond repair. So fans that were hoping when Thomas was released by the Ravens the other day that maybe that means he's going to come back to the Seahawks, even if they had a need at safety, which they don't after trading for Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs over the last year, even if they did need somebody at safety, I don't think there's any way that he would be back in Seattle. I don't think those two sides could mend that relationship in time to make that work. I think eventually these two sides will be able to come together when Thomas is retired. And I expect, just like Richard Sherman, both those guys are going to end up in the Seahawks Ring of Honor and potentially be Hall of Famers. Time heals things. It just hasn't been that long since Earl Thomas was let go. So I think the Seahawks are probably feeling pretty good about the decision that they made there, although they have had to make two trades since to bolster that secondary because the safety position was hurting when they had Tedrick Thompson back there starting. Lano Hill struggled in some games. Flashes from Marquise Blair, but not enough to keep him in the lineup. So overall, though, I think they're probably feeling pretty good about the decision that they made. And now we'll see what happens with Thomas. Maybe he ends up in San Francisco with Sherman. Maybe he goes to the Texans or the Cowboys. Maybe a wild card team emerges. He's talented enough. He's coming off a Pro Bowl. I expect somebody else will give him a chance. But it is pretty damning that the Seahawks and Ravens, two of the most stable, well-coached organizations in the sport, have let go of him in less than two calendar years. Theo Coney tweets, is it likely that we see the Hawks move on from a guy like Bobby Wagner within the next year or two, especially with the exceptional depth they currently have at linebacker? Does it make financial sense for them to keep him around? Well, this all comes down to what Bobby Wagner's still playing like. If Wagner starts to show signs of decline this year, and there are some people that have made the argument he was already showing that last year, I'm not necessarily in that party. I think he was still a fantastic player last year that was hurt a little bit by some of the schematic things the Seahawks were doing. But it all depends on how he plays this year. If he really starts to show signs of decline, we've seen the Seahawks be willing to move on from star players, and he'd be another year into his – it might be a better financial situation for them to be able to move on from him at that point. That said, if I had to make a prediction right now, I absolutely think Bobby Wagner is in a Seahawks uniform in 2021, and I would actually hedge bets that he's going to play out this contract. He's still a fantastic football player. He's so valuable in that locker room as well, and seeing him at training camp, he's looked fantastic. He looks like he might be in the best shape he's been in a couple of years. He's flying all over the field. So as long as he can stay healthy, I think he's going to be on the roster. We know that players can hit a wall once they turn 30 years old, though, as well. So it can't completely rule out that he could be off the roster in the next year or two. I just don't think that's what's going to happen. Christian tweets, the talent of Eli Mensah jumps out off the screen when you're watching his highlight tape. What does he have to do to impress the coaches? Does he have a real shot to make the 53-man roster? I think right now the big issue that Mensah is dealing with is numbers, because especially with Alton Robinson playing so well at the defensive end position, he's been one of the most surprising players at camp so far. You've got Bruce Irvin, you've got Benson Maioa, They're going to get Daryl Taylor back at some point. I would be really surprised if he makes the 53-man roster. Now, he's a player that I think the Seahawks are very keen on the idea of getting him on the practice squad and being able to keep him around so they can develop him. And then maybe a year from now, he's a player that can get some chances on the field for them during regular season action. He gives you some nice insurance there. Certainly, you see the athleticism. I think he's looked much more comfortable the last couple of practices. He got off to a pretty slow start. Undrafted rookies really dealt a bad hand this year, though, not having OTAs and mini camps. Their first practice was the first practice of training camp, trying to learn everything on the fly. Really difficult situation. And I think he's one of the few undrafted guys that's really turned things around after a week of practice, really started to figure things out, did miss a few practices with injury too. So he's got to stay healthy. I think he's probably looking at a practice squad spot right now being his ceiling. Anders tweets, any updates on Josh Gordon? Like, shouldn't he have gotten a decision and reinstatement by now? Also, does the emergence of other young receivers in camp affect the Seahawks' interest in signing Gordon if he's reinstated? So as far as updates go, I was told a couple weeks ago it was going to be happening anytime, any day. The problem is the NFL league office works on its own clock. And that's especially true with players like Gordon that have lengthy suspension histories. I would think that it's going to be happening at any time. As far as the second part of your question, does the emergence of other young receivers in camp affect their interest if he's reinstated? I still think the Seahawks are going to want to bring him back once that happens. And of course, there's always the outside chance the NFL could say, we've suspended you a bunch of times. We're not going to bring you back this time. I would hedge bets right now he's still going to get a chance to be reinstated. It might not end up happening, though, till a week before the start of the regular season. Who knows? Like I said, the NFL operates on their own clock, and this could happen tomorrow. It could happen 2 weeks from now. We don't know, but we do know that Gordon has applied for reinstatement. Now he's just in a waiting pattern here until the NFL issues a verdict, and the same goes for the Seahawks. Their hands are tied until they know that he's available and can be signed. Flow1100 tweets, what's your take on the debate of having fans in the stadiums league-wide? Is it unfair that some teams can while some can't? I do think it's unfair. I've had this discussion with Rob Rang on our show a couple times, and I think if the Seahawks aren't going to have any fans in the stands, and there are a bunch of other teams that aren't going to either, then I don't think the Chiefs or the Texans or the Cowboys or the Dolphins, especially the Dolphins being in the hot spot that is Florida, if those teams are allowed to have fans, it does create an unfair advantage from a competition standpoint. And so I think all the teams should have had a universal thing where we're going to allow a certain number of fans in each stadium, or if everybody can't, if there is one stadium out there where they're not going to be able to allow fans, then nobody else should be able to. Unfortunately, that is not what the NFL decided to do in this instance. And they are going to just let each city, each local area make those decisions. And so I don't agree with it necessarily, but Joe Riley tweets, with Ethan Posa getting the majority of the first team snaps at center, where do you see BJ Finney and his $4.5 million guaranteed fitting into the roster? Joe, I will say this. I'm not allowed to disclose the number of reps in recent practices because the Seahawks have really restricted us on depth chart related stuff that we're allowed to report. But I can tell you that it is still early enough. You could see Ethan Posick, BJ Finney, one of those two guys end up winning that starting spot. I think, like Pete Carroll said, they're still trying to determine who is going to be the guy snapping to Russell Wilson. That decision is going to be made in the near future. But I think at this point, it would be a rush in judgment to say that that decision has already been made. Posick probably is going to be the guy. But again, I think that this is still an open competition between those two players, and Finney's going to still get his opportunities. Dominic tweets, how does Shaquem Griffin look in camp? He's one of my favorite Hawks to root for, and he was really heating up towards the end of last season. I actually had a chance to talk to Bruce Irvin about this earlier today, and Bruce has been fired up seeing how he's progressed this year. He said Griffin's added a couple new pass rush moves to his arsenal. Shaquem Griffin, his twin brother, had told me that a few weeks ago as well, and I've seen it on the practice field. He looks like a different player out there. He isn't just trying to run past people, which, of course, he's still going to do occasionally because he is the fastest edge rusher that the Seahawks have. But I certainly think there's still going to be a role for him in that pass rush. He's too small to be an every-down defensive end, but they will find ways, like they did the second half last season, to use him in pass rushing situations, third and long, second and long. They will get that speed out on the field. And if the end of last season was any indication, then he's going to have an opportunity to rack up a few sacks this year for the Seahawks as well. Anybody that's going to be able to pitch in for a pass rush that struggled compared to the rest of the league, that's going to be a big deal for the team this year. So I'm looking for him to make a pretty good jump in year three, being a key reserve rotational rusher for the Seahawks. Maurice Lavelle tweets, heard some good things from Jake Heaps about P.J. Johnson. What have you seen so far? I asked Pete Carroll about Johnson today, and he was upfront that, look, we haven't had enough of an opportunity to see him. He's only participated in four practices now for the Seahawks, but he is every bit of the 335 pounds that he is listed on Seattle's roster. This is a big guy that actually has some pass rushing upside. If you go back and look at his film at the University of Arizona, where he starred in 2018, it was his only season in the Pac-12. He was an honorable mention selection, had three sacks, 8.5 tackles for loss. That was a defense that gave up a lot of yards and a lot of points, but he was one of the few bright spots on the defense. And the few practices I've been able to see him out there so far, he has certainly made an impact on that run defense. He's a tough guy to move, and he's surprisingly athletic. He's made a few plays on the outside as well. So he's a player I'm intrigued by. I'm interested to see what he does these next couple weeks and if that's going to be enough for him to earn a roster spot. Last question here coming from So Dang Close tweets, are fans' expectations too low for Jaron Reed? He had a tough year last year, was suspended 6 games. I think to an extent they are, because everybody's looking at last year and wondering if 2018 was a fluke. Pete Carroll has said that they think last year was more the fluke than the season before. Just 2 sacks in 10 games after the suspension, never really was able to get himself going. In the playoffs, he had a couple opportunities for sacks and let it slip through his grasp. And so it was just kind of one of those, going with your Twitter name, he was so dang close to getting the quarterback down and was just not able to do it last year. And based on what I've seen so far at camp this season, again, he came to camp in great shape. Looks like he's right around that 300, 305 pound range. He's athletic enough at the position. I think he's going to bounce back. And I'm not saying he's going to get 10.5 sacks again like he did 2 years ago, but I could see him going out and getting 5-6 sacks, which being able to do that would be a big improvement from last season, would certainly help this defense as they try to get back into the top 5, top 10 defensive units in the NFL. Certainly as a player, after getting paid by the Seahawks this year, a 2-year deal, he's going to try to get one more big contract a couple years from now. This is a really big season. I expect that he is going to play at a much higher level. When we come back for the third quarter, not going to be able to disclose as much as I would like to, but going to break down a few observations from Saturday's mock game at CenturyLink Field. You won't want to miss it. You're listening to Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Saturday, the Seahawks finally had a mock scrimmage at CenturyLink Field. No preseason games this year, so these mock games have much greater importance in 2020 than they normally do. Not that they're not important in other seasons, but this year they have been taken up a notch or two. I'll be up front right now. I can't say near as much as I would like to about what I observed at the game. The Seahawks didn't allow us to tweet during the scrimmage. We had limited details that we were allowed to share after the game based on the box score. So there are some takeaways I'd love to dive into that, unfortunately, I won't be able to, but there's still plenty to unpack. And let's just start with the fact that it was extremely bizarre covering a game in an empty stadium. We all knew that it was going to be this way with COVID-19. And the Seahawks announced last week that the first 3 games minimum, they won't have any fans in the stands. So this is something we're just going to have to get used to. Watching it on TV with the NBA and Major League Baseball, though, didn't really do anything compared to actually being at the game and experiencing it in the press box. It was surreal, especially when you're used to being there and hearing all the 12 screaming like crazy. And they tried to replicate it by playing some fake noise over the PA, some fake crowd noise, experimenting with the decibel level, which they'll be able to pick before the game starts, and then they can't change once the game starts. They had a national anthem that was played that was pre-recorded. You name it. They were making this as authentic for week one as they could, but that didn't make it any less uncomfortable not having fans there. It was certainly an eye-opener to all of us reporters that were covering this game, and I'm sure the players were experiencing something much different, especially the guys that have played in CenturyLink Field. The incoming rookies, they might not have been deterred as much, but players like Russell Wilson that are used to having that crowd behind them, it had to be a totally different experience out there playing on that field, not having anybody except a couple photographers in the stands. Now, talking about players specifically, Geno Smith, to me, was the MVP of this mock scrimmage. There were only four drives played before Brandon Jackson was injured and then ended up calling off the last two quarters. But he was perfect during this scrimmage. 8 for 8, completed all of his passes. The first drive had a couple nice throws to John Ursua. And then he threw a ball up to undrafted rookie Aaron Fuller, who had Shaquille Griffin all over him in coverage. And give Fuller some credit. The undrafted rookie went up and he snagged the football out of the air, pulled it down, almost got him into the red zone. Very next play, Geno Smith hits Jacob Hollister, the tight end that finished third on the team in receptions and receiving yards last year, for the touchdown. So they scored in a matter of minutes. It was a perfect opening drive orchestrated by Smith. Shortly after Smith threw his touchdown to Hollister, then Russell Wilson came back and he led his offensive unit right down the field, completed several nice passes, a couple clutch third down receptions by Tyler Lockett, Greg Olsen with a big catch, more on him here in a moment. And then he ended up throwing a touchdown to DK Metcalf with Nico Thorpe in coverage, running the slant, wide open in the end zone, snags it, ties the game up. Smith comes right back and leads his team down. They end up having to settle for a field goal because Bobby Wagner came in and sacked him on a blitz. But again, 8 for 8. Geno Smith has been one of the best players at training camp this year for the Seahawks, too. He's really shown an improvement in his decision-making, his accuracy. He's always had the strong arm. He's always been a plus athlete, which, of course, is intriguing to Seattle, having him as a backup if Russell Wilson ever did go down. Having a player that can do a little bit of everything. He's got that big arm. He's got the running ability. And now he looks like he's really got this offense mastered in his second season here. So, God forbid, if they do have to play him during the regular season, Pete Carroll and company can have some confidence in the short term that Smith can come in, a guy that has started 30-plus games in the NFL, and he can lead this offense and keep them competitive if need be. In the backfield, DJ Dallas, I've talked about him a bunch on this podcast. The rookie out of Miami has been nothing but impressive. He didn't have any receptions in the mock game, but that was something that Coach Pete Carroll, as well as Russell Wilson, were gushing about after the game. Not just the fact that this guy is a really good runner between the tackles and that he brings professionalism with him. This is a very mature rookie. He was a team leader at Miami, really has been the leader of that rookie group throughout the offseason, as Wilson noted. But he's just really exceeded all expectations as a receiver on the practice field. And again, no receptions in the mock game, but still ran hard when he was given the opportunity, had a couple nice carries out of the backfield. Can't really say where they had him lined up, but certainly a player that gives them a lot of flexibility in their offensive scheme and continues to impress in his first training camp with the Seahawks. And at the tight end position, Greg Olsen, I mentioned that he had a nice reception in that opening drive. He might be 35 years old, but as Pete Carroll said last week, for an old guy, he can still run pretty darn well. He's got a lot left in the tank. A couple of his receptions from Wilson, he was able to really show off his wheels, particularly on that opening drive. He came wide open off a rub route. He turned upfield, and you just don't see very many tight ends, let alone a 35-year-old one that's now in his 14th year in the league, turning upfield and having a chance to score a touchdown. If this was an actual game, I think he would have found the end zone. They marked him out inside the 10-yard line, but I think he would have scored if this was an actual game situation. He's still a fantastic athlete, and he and Russell Wilson already have a pretty good rapport going, and they've only been working together for a couple of weeks. Once they get to the regular season, a few more weeks under their belt, continuing to work together, this has a chance to be a really special pairing, especially when defenses are already going to have to deal with DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett on the outside. As far as defense goes, not a lot to talk about on defense, which is strange because most of the training camp practices that I've been in attendance for, the defense has been the winning side. There's been a lot of really good defensive practices for the Seahawks. In this particular mock scrimmage, though, there really were only a couple plays that really stood out for positive reasons. Geno Smith led his offense the opening drive right down the field. There was really no resistance. And then the same could be said the next drive, a few more third down opportunities set up by the defense, but Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett and company were able to move the chains. As far as standout plays, there were really only two that jumped out to me during those two quarters. I mentioned Bobby Wagner. He thwarted a potential touchdown drive. Geno Smith in his second drive had driven the team down the field. They were in the red zone, and it was third down and short. Wagner shot through the A-gap on a blitz, ended up bringing down Smith for the sack, and they were forced to take the field goal. on the previous drive with Russell Wilson on the field. The other play that jumped out, haven't mentioned this player very much during his first training camp, but undrafted rookie defensive tackle Cedric Lattimore did a really nice job getting his hands up in the air and swatting away a pass from Russell Wilson that would have been an easy first down conversion to Philip Dorsett, but he knocked the ball down at the line of scrimmage and it set up a third down. Wilson did come back and hit Lockett the next play to pick up enough yardage to move the chains, but still a nice play for Lattimore, somebody that I thought going into this camp was going to be an undrafted rookie to watch. He's been kind of quiet to this point. Had a really nice play there, though, and he's somebody that has done some nice things in recent practice as well. Seems to be getting his footing. Otherwise, though, a pretty quiet defensive day. Most of the afternoon belonged to the offense until they ended up calling off the last two quarters. They'll have another game coming up on Wednesday. It's going to be critical that they can get all four quarters in so they can really get everything done that they want to on both sides of the ball. The defense is going to be looking to bounce back a little bit after kind of a shaky performance on Saturday. Meanwhile, the offensive unit, whether Russell Wilson or Geno Smith is under center, they're going to look to keep that momentum going at CenturyLink Field and try to put up some points, again, hoping for four full quarters this time around in their second mock game. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Tomorrow, Rob Rang will be rejoining me for Throwback Tuesday. We're going to look back at a statistical anomaly in a game from prior Seahawks history. And, of course, we're going to break down some observations from the latest practice at the VMAC. Seattle will be back out there for their 11th practice on Tuesday. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.